Welcome to the Princeton Laxcast. I'm Jerry Price. I'm joined by Princeton head men's lacrosse coach Matt Matalon. Coach, welcome aboard.
Jerry, happy to be back on.
Our podcast, as always, is brought to you by RWJ Barnabas Health, the official health system of Princeton Athletics. To learn more about services and locations, visit rwjbh.org. Let's be healthy together. We want to thank RWJ Barnabas Health, the official health system of Princeton Athletics, for sponsoring our podcasts all year. Well, this is what you get into coaching to do. It's coach your team in the NCAA tournament. You get to do it at home. It is Saturday at noon. It'll be Princeton and Boston University, a rematch from a game of April 9th. And before we dive into the specifics of it, how do you feel? You know, what is your personal Matt Matalon feeling about being a head coach of a team in the NCAA tournament?
It's exciting. It's something we've always wanted for these guys in our program. You know, this isn't about me, but I was fortunate enough to have this experience as a player, and I watched how it changed our Roanoke teams and our programs and the expectations and the standards and the confidence and the preparedness. So it's just a really exciting time for our group. And, you know, obviously it didn't, you know, the Ivy League season, our regular season ended in a bit of a, you know, funky way and a tiebreaker and, you know, missing out on an opportunity to compete in the Ivy League tournament, but we've kind of got ourselves a little healthier. We powered through exams and we've had a great week of prep. So very much looking forward to Saturday.
So let's talk a little bit about, because we didn't talk last week, your team was 9-2 and had a 9-4 lead over Harvard in the second quarter. Looked like it was on its way to, you know, making the Ivy tournament, winning an Ivy League championship. And then at that point, it got away a little bit. And Harvard came back and won that game. Then Cornell got out to the huge lead. And then things switched back and, you know, got down by 8, lost by 3, cut it to 1 twice. So basically it's that 60 minutes in between the second half of Harvard and the first half of Cornell that sort of sabotaged your chance to get into the Ivy League tournament and to win a piece of the championship. What's your takeaway from that? And because then again, it just turned on a dime and it was Princeton being Princeton again in the second half of Cornell. It's just the hole was too big.
I think that's always, look, I mean, that's always been our message. It's actually Princeton versus Princeton and trying to get the best version of ourselves and trying to limit our mistakes. And I think those, you know, you said it, you hit the nail on the head in terms of trying to put together 60-minute performances. And those were two games where that didn't culminate. You know, we weren't, whether it be organized, making plays, you know, just some breaks or bounces. But we didn't earn any of those. Harvard did a nice job, you know, in the second half of that game. And then obviously Cornell got off and running right off the bat. So that's kind of been our message over the last little while, is just learn from those mistakes and, you know, spin this in a way that, you know, we can now get healthy and get a little rested and get ready to rock and roll.
If we go back to Saturday, April 30th at about 2:30 in the afternoon, I think everybody on the team was crushed that they weren't going to be in the Ivy League tournament. Maybe by Thursday or Friday of last week, I think there was a general sense that the week off and getting that rest, the physical and mental rest, might have been a good thing. What do you think of that?
Yeah, look, that's absolutely how we spin it, because that's actually how we take it, actually, because when it shakes out, that was our path. You know, our goal as a coaching staff is to always give these guys and give our teams two paths to the NCAA tournament. You know, obviously, program goals are, you know, capitalize on an Ivy League championship and earn yourself an opportunity to play for a national championship. But in terms of scheduling and how we prepare our group, we try to give ourselves two avenues in, whether it be through strength of schedule, you know, in our opponents or through the Ivy League tournament. So just very fortunate that we were able to handle our business early on throughout the year, build a good resume, and earn an opportunity to play in the NCAA tournament as a home seed.
The good resume is the wins over Georgetown and Rutgers early in the season, and also the wins over Penn, Brown, and BU the first time. Princeton has more wins over the seeded teams. Princeton has 4 wins over the seeded teams in the tournament, and there's only 7 of them that's not Princeton, so that's pretty impressive. No bad losses. It's a very, very strong resume. So there was really no doubt that Princeton was going to be in the NCAA tournament when the selection show started on Sunday night. Did you have a thought of where you were going to be seated? Did you have a preference of any of that kind of stuff, or you were just happy to see the name come up?
No preference. I mean, we always try, you know, we try to sit here and, you know, crack codes and do the math and look at the projections and look at the strength of schedule. And, you know, all year, you know, we were coming in as one of the top RPI teams, 1, 2, or 3. There were some regional rankings or, you know, NCAA rankings that had come out that had us, you know, in the 2 or 3 spot. So we had figured that we would get penalized a little bit for not playing in the Ivy League tournament, which we did. So we had thought maybe 2 through 5 or 3 through 5, but really anywhere, you know, we just hoped we had the opportunity to play another day at 52 and host another team. So anywhere in the top 8, we were really thrilled with, but you're spot on, anywhere in the NCAA tournament, just an opportunity to get back to 0-0, new season approach, as every team in this has this mentality. And then now it's tackle it and see how well you can play and make a run at this thing.
As the matchups were being announced, you know, no surprise that Maryland was one, no surprise Georgetown was two. As they did it, you know, Princeton came up as the 5 seed, but they didn't show the opponent. And then you saw the 5 Ivy teams seeded. And I think everybody thought, okay, 5 Ivy teams, that's pretty good. And then I think when Harvard's name came up, the reaction inside your team's locker room was almost more, you know, dramatic than when Princeton's name came up, because it was the 6th Ivy League team. There's been a lot of discussion about should Harvard be in or not be in, who got left out, Notre Dame, Duke, anybody else, you know, not really looking to get into that, but as an Ivy League coach coming into this season, if I had said to you 6 Ivy League teams are going to get into the NCAA tournament and the 7th Ivy League team is a team that was, you know, a couple of bounces here and there from being right in the mix, would you have thought, yeah, you know, I think that after the year away, everybody's primed and ready to go? Or would you have said there's no chance that happens?
I would have probably said no chance, because it was too, I mean, just even working through our own team and seeing our team come together and how long it took through preseason. I just, you know, I knew the Ivies were going to come back strong. I've been so impressed with how all these coaching staffs have been recruiting in league and building their teams. But with just the shakeup of rosters and some guys graduating and some guys coming back and larger rosters, we all had our hurdles. So no, very proud of the Ivy League. Incredible to be represented in this Ivy, in this NCAA tournament with 6 teams, and happy for the guys up north. You know, it's good to any opportunity to play in the NCAA tournament is a special one. And the fact that 6 Ivy League teams are up there in the mix bodes well for the future of this league.
So are you doing the live read or am I doing the live read?
You're going to rock and roll. You got that soothing voice.
Now is the time to plan your windows, doors, or siding project. Give Lawrenceville Home Improvement a call at 609-882-6709 for your free estimate on the highest quality products with superior installation practices. When it's time to improve your home's appearance and energy efficiency, remember Lawrenceville Home Improvement, windows, doors, and siding. Find them on the web or visit their showroom today. Before we get into the game on Saturday, which will be against Boston University on Sherrod Field, that's a noon faceoff in the first game of the 8 games this weekend. One thing I would just throw out at you is if they came to you and said, okay, there's 8 slots of games, 4 Saturday, 4 Sunday at noon, 2:30, 5, and 7:30, which one do you want to be in? I'm guessing that you would have said, we'll take Saturday at noon, right?
Our guys are chomping at the bit to play again. They're just excited to get out there and get after it. We've almost kind of had a mini postseason preseason with our time off. So Saturday at noon works for us.
So let's talk about 2 things before we get into that. One is postseason honors. 8 players earned all Ivy, 2 earned first team all Ivy. George Bond did so for the 2nd time. Obviously would have been 3 times if he had played in another season. And Chris Brown for the first time, first ever postseason recognition of any kind, not even honorable mention all Ivy prior to this, first team all Ivy League on attack in a league that's just stocked with guys on attack. How happy were you for Chris Brown?
Really happy. I mean, look, Chris has been, you know, he's arguably our team MVP. His toughness and consistency has been outstanding. He's a captain and a leader for our program. He's a model citizen within the program, but what he does on the field for us is special. And he's been this over the last handful of years, this has been a ridiculous Ivy League attack league, you know, in terms of the Sowers, the Teats, the Reeves. I mean, these are all Matthias. These are all incredible players that have come through kind of in Chris Brown's tenure. So he's kind of just been a little behind the pack. So for him to get up there and get recognized, you know, we're really proud of him. But I'm just really happy for him. He deserves the recognition.
And then 4 guys on second team, 2 honorable mention guys. The honorable mention guys were Alex Slusher, Alexander Vardaro. The second team guys were Sam English, Jake Stevens, Andrew Song, and Bo Pedersen. You know, we've talked about all these guys all year long, but I would think that you got to be pretty happy that Song got second team. I think it's a pretty good recognition of for Bo Pettersson. And one thing I would say is that the idea that you have eight guys, two first team guys, it just sort of speaks to the depth of the team. And that's really where the success of this team has been. It's been the number of quality players that you can put out there across the board. And, you know, that depth showed up on the All Ivy team. You agree with that?
Absolutely. I mean, truest sense of the program, you know, to be able to play more guys and go deeper down your bench and compete every day at practice. So obviously very happy for the postseason awards for these guys. The fact that peer coaches recognize these guys as big time players, you know, it's going to continue to bode well for our program with these, some of these guys being younger players in the house, but just really happy for the recognition.
And the other thing is no George Bond, no Chris Brown, no Andrew Song, no senior selected in the PLL draft. Interesting, you know, just as a lacrosse fan to see Logan Wisnowskis from Maryland go first over Chris Gray. Very interesting picks there. Interesting to see some of the guys who were selected. Do you think any of those guys who are currently seniors may find their way into onto somebody's into the player pool and find their way onto somebody's team?
I do. We spoke to a handful of general managers and scouting reps and coaches for the PLL teams about the about our guys. And there are different there are opportunities outside of last night's draft to get picked up in the supplemental rounds or player pool opportunities. So I do. I think these guys can play at the next level. I think they're really talented. They're very fit. The college guys come out, but it was awesome. It's incredible to see that on ESPN. I thought everyone did a wonderful job. I mean, Ryan Boyle, our Princeton alum, does. He's one of the best, if not the best, in the business of broadcasting and announcing lacrosse. So to see him on there, you know, his insight, the way he talks about guys, and what Ryan did best, or better than anyone, I think, is that he really talks about the team's fits, and he really references last year's playoff run and. He just did a wonderful job. And I think that's where, you know, look, Logan Wisnowskis going number one overall. Maybe it's more of a team fit than it may be, you know, Chris Gray or this or that. But very happy to see, obviously, you know, we want to continue to produce and develop. You know, we take a lot of pride in our program about developing our talent. So we absolutely want to see some Tigers playing in the PLL in the near future.
And Princeton represented in the PLL with guys like Michael Sowers and Ryan Ambler and Zach Currier and forgetting anybody?
Tom.
Oh, yeah. Forgot the one main guy, Tom Schreiber. I threw that out there just to see if you were
paying. They're awesome. Those guys are great. And it's, you know, to have a couple of those guys on the same team too. And we've also got Brian Kavanaugh, who's an assistant at the University of Vermont, who's coaching with Chris Bates on the Archers staff. We've had Simsy bouncing around trying to make some rosters there. So yeah, it's again, it's a really, really challenging league to get into. There aren't that many opportunities. I mean, you know, the goalie, the faceoff positions are so hard to crack. Those are mostly held down by veterans. And then again, it's such a, you know, it's a league where you really do have to maximize your time away. You practice once a week, you play once a week, and then you've got an incredibly long off season, probably an 8 or 9 month off season. You know, and I know Paul Rabel had jumped on the broadcast last night to talk just about that and just alluded to how, you know, in terms of your longevity as a pro, you really, really have to have the discipline. And that's where I think the Princeton guys can be great in the league. These guys are fit guys and they will understand that. So
the PLL, by the way, this year is going to be on every game is available on ESPN Plus. There'll be some games on ESPN and ESPN2, but the main point is that if you watch Princeton or Ivy League games on ESPN Plus, you'll be able to watch the PLL games this year too, which is a great thing if you're a fan of lacrosse and the Princeton guys that we mentioned. So let's talk about the NCAA tournament. Princeton, first, let's start with the history of Princeton in the NCAA tournament. Princeton, 30-14 all time in NCAA tournament games, 6 national championships, 2 more finals, 10 Final Fours in all, has not been to the NCAA tournament since 2012. One thing I would say is that Princeton has built its legacy in the postseason on its ability to win one goal games. 4 of its national championships came in overtime. Princeton 19-5 all time in one goal NCAA tournament games. Have you talked about this with your team and the idea that when you get to the postseason and when you play in these NCAA tournament games, a lot of them are close, a lot of them are tight going down the stretch, and you need to sort of not take any possessions for granted?
Absolutely. I mean, especially coming out of our messaging around 60 minutes and cherishing every opportunity. That's been our message, and the history's incredible, and our guys are happy to be back in the mix. It's a tough tournament to get into. You really do have to handle your business throughout the year in conference and out of league. So we're just really excited to get after it.
So let's talk about Boston University, who comes to Sherrod Field. That game starts at noon on Saturday. Princeton and BU played once already this year. That game was won by Princeton 12-7. It was 5-3 Tigers at the half. BU scored the first two goals in the third quarter, and then Princeton put it away from there. BU is the Patriot League champ. The first question I would say to you is they had two emotional games last week. They had the overtime game against Lehigh, and then they toughed one out 14-10 over Army in the championship game. Would you rather be the team that had the week off, or would you rather be the team that, you know, it's like the NFL playoffs, right? The team that that got in with having to win the first round game versus the other team that had the week off. Is there anything to that at all? You know, BU's got, they will have had 6 days of rest as opposed to your team, which will have 2 full weeks of rest. But on the other hand, they played a couple of really tight postseason games already. Who has the edge there?
I mean, we're really happy with the situation we were in. And look, there are positives to both, to be able to keep humming, keep playing, go down your bench, develop guys, get postseason experience is great for BU. And on the latter, the rest is great for Princeton. So that's a team that's playing well. It's a team, both teams are a month better and a month deeper into their season. So it'll be a heck of a matchup.
Teams are 1-2 in the country in causing turnovers, 3-4 in ground balls. Those things kind of go together a bit. First game, there were 46 turnovers in the first game. Each team turned the ball over 23 times. Princeton won the ground ball matchup, but I think it was kind of both teams, showing that they can cause turnovers. The big thing from the first game, BU has the highest scoring attack in the country, and they were shut down against Princeton the first time. Do you just try to do more of what you did the first time? Do you have to change things around knowing they're going to change things around? Can you overthink those things? Am I overstating all of this?
No. You're spot on. It's an awesome attack unit. It's three guys that have great chemistry together and they play off each other well. We were able to defend them pretty successfully early on, but like I said, I mean, both teams are a month better and their systems are developed. So, we've got to make a few changes. I'm sure they're going to make a few adjustments and we'll upgrade some of our systems, to hopefully be able to defend them and lock those guys down. But they do an outstanding job defensively, like you said, of creating turnovers. They do it both in the ride and within their defensive scheme. So it's just a team that knows who they are. They've got a good understanding of their systems, and they're playing really well right now.
You talk about their ride, the 10-man ride that they love to do. I think, if I'm not mistaken, the first time you saw it this year was in the BU game. The first time you saw it extensively was in the BU game, but you've seen it several times since. I guess there's an advantage to having gone against it.
Sure. I mean, again, like if it's not something you do every day, being able to rev it up for a week or a couple of days of practice and get your guys prepared, it's possible. It's just as you see that ride more and you learn how to communicate and make work through your adjustments and your passing schemes, it becomes a little easier. But they do a wonderful job with it. So that'll be a test for us come game day.
So it's Princeton and Boston University. That game is a noon start Saturday on Sherrod Field, the opening round of the NCAA tournament. The winner of that game will play next Saturday at Hofstra against the winner of Yale and St. Joe's. Before we let you go, two things. One is to wish you luck in the game on Saturday. The other is we will be chatting with senior faceoff man Jack Henry Vara after this. I know you love to talk a little bit about your guys before we bring them on. What do you think of what Jack Henry Vara brings to the program?
Oh, he's going to be great on the podcast, but in terms of what he brings to a program is a consistent toughness, and he's an incredible teammate. You know, he's found himself as our starter taking faceoffs, full games for us. He's found himself in the backup role as well. And he doesn't waver in kind of his energy and effort and attitude. So whether it's working as a scout guy or working as our lead guy, he's just been impressive. And then off the field, Jack and I have a wonderful relationship. He actually just landed his job opportunity for the future. So we're thrilled for him. He's going to be great on the podcast. I'm fired up for him to be on.
What makes you think he'll be great?
I mean, I just think he's got a quick wit to him. I don't know if you're going to challenge him like that, but he's got a good lacrosse IQ and he's got a great understanding of our program.
Yeah. He just comes across as just a really solid guy. And just
he really is. You know, he's an awesome guy.
Yeah. Like, as you said, the kind of guy that you want to have on your team.
Absolutely.
Coach Madelon, thanks for being with us.
Jerry, I'm excited. Go Tigers. I'm excited to see everyone in the stands at 52. Be a big one come Saturday.
Saturday at noon, and you've been listening to the Princeton Laxcast. We'll take a short break, and we'll be back with senior faceoff man Jack Henry Vara.
Looking to get away this weekend but don't want to go far? How about a last-minute getaway to the Princeton Marriott at Forestal, nestled on 25 acres of lush woods and just a few minutes from campus? Enjoy tranquil guest rooms, state-of-the-art health club, indoor pool, and a full-service spa. Stop in for breakfast, lunch, or dinner, craft cocktails and local beers at Iron and Ivy. Plus, their 2,100-square-foot M-Club lounge takes relaxation and convenience to a whole new level. If a wedding, reunion, or other social event is in your future, the Princeton Marriott has a variety of event spaces, indoor and outdoor. Located on College Road East across from the Forestal Village, explore all the Princeton Marriott at Forestal has to offer at PrincetonMarriott.com.
Welcome back to the Princeton Laxcast. I'm Jerry Price. I'm joined by Princeton senior faceoff man, Jack Henry Varr. Jack, welcome aboard.
Hey, Mr. Price. It's great to be here. I'm excited to finally be on the podcast.
Yeah, well, we're happy to have you, and especially given the fact that it's getting ready for the NCAA tournament. Princeton-Boston University will play Saturday at noon on Sherrod Field. Just talk a little bit about what it means to you to be part of the class that has brought Princeton back to the NCAA tournament.
That's a great question. It means a lot. I mean, just to be a part of this program from when I first came in, to see how much we've progressed since our freshman year. From a leadership standpoint, from a team standpoint, it's just a testament to the amount of people that came before us and the product that Coach Madelon's put together. It's a real honor to kind of be able to have the opportunity to see this through and be a part of something so special.
So, you know, in all fairness, the team of 2020 was definitely pointed to the NCAA tournament when that season ended. No lacrosse last year, you come into this year. Did you have an idea of what to expect after that much time away? And did you see this team being as good as it's been?
Yeah, I absolutely did. I think it was a big feeling in our class that we had something special to look forward to. The 2020 class was a really special class, but we saw the group of young guys that we had below us, the class is coming in. And I think it's a testament to, the guys taking the year off in my class. We did it for a reason. We did it for obviously leadership reasons, the ability and also the importance of passing on, the culture that's been built here over the last 5 years. But also just the opportunity that we saw in front of us to put together a really special season. It's an incredible opportunity and something we wanted to see through and make sure that we gave our best effort. And now we got it in front of us. So it's been worth it.
What was the moment where you thought to yourself, yes, we have a team that can get to the postseason? Was it in the fall? Was it in the spring? Was it, when practice started? Was there that one moment that you remember and you thought to yourself, yeah, this team's pretty good?
I honestly, in fall ball, I knew pretty early on. I think our fall scrimmages was a good measure up for us to be like, wow, okay, we haven't played lacrosse in 2 years and we look really good. But even throughout the fall, it was more about, not on my class, having confidence in the team, but building confidence in the younger guys to know that, we have a lot of talent here. We're putting in a lot of work and we have a real opportunity to achieve something special this year. I would say it was most about, getting the younger guys up to speed and helping them realize, the potential season that we could have. But yeah, I knew pretty early on, and I think our class knew pretty early on, that we really had something special here.
How disappointing was it not to reach the Ivy League tournament in the moments after the Cornell game? And then did that disappointment sort of fade when you saw that you were going to have a time to rest and the week off maybe was a bit helpful?
Yeah. So it was obviously really disappointing to not make the Ivy League tournament, being in the locker room after and kind of having that realization, this might have been the last time I put on the jersey. It was tough, but also, looking at our schedule, the way our coaches scheduled our games, we were pretty confident within the hours after that we were going to receive a bid and hopefully be a pretty high seed. But in general, it was just it was a sobering feeling of being like, okay, like our goals coming into this year were pretty clear from a senior class standpoint. It was Ivy League championship, national championship. Those were the two goals. To fall short on the first one was definitely disappointing, but it also just makes it, the opportunity to be in the NCAA tournament just that much more special to be able to see this last goal through.
What were the emotions for you and for your team as you watched the selection show?
Excitement. I mean, it was a little nerve wracking. You know, we're all on Twitter before we're talking about, you know, what seed means, who we're playing, you know, and all that. And just to see your name called, I mean, it was a really special moment to just see, you know, Princeton be displayed on that for the first time since I think 2012. You know, I think it was just, you know, it was incredible to say the least.
What were you thinking when you saw, okay, so now you see five Ivy League teams are seated and playing at home. What was the reaction when Harvard's name came up and you realized that six Ivy League teams had made it into the tournament? And what does it say just about how tough this league has been this year?
I mean, I think the fact that we didn't make the Ivy League tournament is a testament alone to how talented this league is. Every game has just been an absolute bloodbath, you know, from the first whistle to the last whistle. I think the six teams making it, you know, Harvard and the locker room seeing Harvard make the team was, you know, we're all a little shocked. I think just mostly because reading from an analyst perspective and everyone who, you know, kind of is supposed to know or be able to predict accurately who's going to make the tournament, you know, a lot of people counted out Harvard. I think Harvard's a really talented team. They gave us a really good game. I think they, you know, they have a really good opportunity to do something on their end of the bracket. But yeah, I think it's definitely a testament to just how talented and how deep this league is that six Ivy Leagues made it. I mean, at a conference, we were dominant. Every game was a bloodbath and it was pretty cool.
Let's talk about the week now leading up to the game. What has it been like to get, you know, compare practice last week to this week. So last week, you don't know who you're playing. You know, there was the good sense that, you know, there was a 99.9% chance that you'd be playing somebody. Didn't know who. Now you know who it is. It's a team you've played before. What is the attitude of your team right now?
You know, I really like the attitude we've taken and the approach we've taken so far. Last week's practices were pretty tough. You know, we kind of looked at it and our coaches looked at it as what they coined upgrade season. You know, we kind of had a little bit of a preseason type of week for the postseason. You know, I think it was good for us to get back to our roots in that grinder mentality. But in terms of the opponent, you know, I think the special thing about postseason lacrosse is it doesn't really matter who your opponent is. And we definitely have that mindset of, you know, whoever's in front of us, we need to take down and we're going to do whatever we take and give it our all to make sure that we win on Saturday.
So let's talk about you. You were a face-off man. You're from Massachusetts. Talk a little bit about how you got into lacrosse, what your earliest experiences as an athlete were, and how you came to be a face-off man. Even though I know the answers to all of this because you and I drove to Maryland together and in the very brief, so that was, you know, that was in the back in late February. You were just getting cleared from the COVID protocol on the morning of the game. So I stayed back and drove you down to Maryland. I met you at Trenton Mercer Airport. By the time we got over the bridge into Pennsylvania, you were already asleep and you woke up about 10 minutes before we got to Maryland. But in those 10 minutes that we were still in the car, I already heard all this, but it is pretty interesting. So just talk a little bit about your evolution as an athlete.
We should have filmed the podcast in the car, man. That would have been interesting. It would have been fun too. So yeah, I mean, if coming from Massachusetts, it's not typically, you know, known as one of the hotbeds. I've played lacrosse basically my whole life. I think starting when I was about, you know, 6 or 7 years old, it was the first time I put on the helmet and picked up a stick. You know, I was always a middie for, I'd say, 90% of my career. And then come, you know, my freshman year of high school, I was on the JV team. I kind of lost the love of lacrosse a little bit. I honestly was considering, you know, potentially putting the stick down and focusing on hockey, which is another sport I played. But in that May, I was actually watching the national championship and I think the 2013 national championship. It was Duke and Syracuse. And I watched Brendan Fowler just absolutely dominate the faceoff X. And I thought to myself, I was like, wow, that looks like a really cool position. I've never really tried facing off. You know, my dad faced off in the 80s when he was in high school and he always encouraged me to give it a try. So I thought, you know, that looks fun. I can have a major impact on the game. It's a really unique position. It's all in my hands for the most part. So that summer I started going to clinics and you know, I got the attention of a few faceoff coaches pretty quickly who saw me as a, potential talent, and they kind of took me under their wing and trained me pretty hard. And I went and saw them, drove down to Long Island with my dad, you know, multiple times a year just to get face-off training alone. And it benefited a lot, you know, that I was, you know, even in the club scene in Massachusetts, there weren't a lot of face-off guys. And I was going through, I was actually the first face-off guy to ever be on my club team, pure just FOGO. And now to look at, you know, Massachusetts now, there's so many talented face-off guys coming out of it. It's cool. And in some sense, you know, a lot of those guys I've trained with and worked with and kind of spread the position to in Massachusetts. So, it's a really humbling experience to see some guys, you know, crush it in their college careers right now. And you know, it's just, I think it's a testament to the growth of the sport and also the strength of Massachusetts as a potential hotbed for lacrosse.
What's it like being a face-off specialist when the team breaks for pregame film or something, or pre-practice film? You have the offense here, you have the defense here, and you have three face-off guys. It's you, Tyler Sandoval, and Kobe Ginder, mm-hmm. and you're just sort of sitting there on your own and you're doing your thing. And it's kind of like, it's not exactly like being the punter and the kicker in football, but it's, you know, you're certainly your own breed to be a face-off guy. What is it like? Not before we talk about the actual facing off, what's it like to be part of a face-off group that's not really offense or defense?
You know, it's interesting. In the fall, I made sure to make a big push for us to be involved in the offense and defensive side of film and practice as much as we can. But then come season time, you know, our job is to be face-off guys and to win the ball and secure possessions for our team and put our team in a good position to, you know, tilt the field in a sense and score more goals. You know, the more you have the ball, the more opportunities you have to score goals. In a simplistic manner, that's kind of the importance of a solid face-off guy. But yeah, it's definitely different. Our coaches love to crunch film. We'll have about 30, 45 minutes to ourselves typically on a day where the team is watching film. And in that time period, you know, we'll watch film with each other, you know, prep for the game, write our own scouting reports. You know, I've tried to, this year especially, implement a lot of things that we do together to kind of build a cohesive game plan for each of us. So we try to send notes to each other and watch film and send notes of what we think the guy's strengths and weaknesses are, what we think each other's strengths or weaknesses are against our opponent. And then we practice that basically, you know, for about, I'd say about 60% of practice or 50 to 60% of practice on a daily basis is, you know, all about mimicking that guy's moves, giving whoever you're facing off against a good scout or, you know, working on your own move and practicing your strengths against that guy's weaknesses and vice versa.
So if you look at the rules that have been implemented in lacrosse over the last decade, the biggest thing obviously is the shot clock, which has changed a lot of how lacrosse is played. The one area that has been tinkered with the most is faceoffs. And they've changed the mechanics, they changed them back, they changed the rules, they changed the actual way that the refs put the ball down. It's just a constantly evolving position. As a faceoff specialist, one, what's your favorite part of facing off? Two, what's the toughest part of facing off? And three, do you like the rules as they are currently in place where you can't be on your knees, you have to be behind the line? You know, it used to be you could be on your knees, you could actually have your body leaning over the line. You know, the ref is right on top blowing the whistle. What do you think of the rules as they're currently written, and also what's your favorite part and what's the toughest part?
So the new rules I actually really like. When I first came in as a face-off specialist, you could be on your knee, motorcycle grip, ball was placed down first, and you could keep the ball in the back of your stick. So I kind of experienced that version of facing off. I experienced the version where you couldn't keep the ball on your stick anymore. You had to pop it. And now I'm experiencing, you know, the stand up neutral grip version of the face off. You know, I think of all of the different rules I've played with, standing neutral grip is my favorite just because I think it opens up the possibility of numerous different face off guys and different styles to be successful at the college level, which is really the first time, you know. In the old rules, everyone was the same thing, knee down, you know, clamp as fast and as hard as you can. Now there's counters, there's breaks, clamps, shovel counters, reverse shovel counters. You know, it's a bunch of terminology that I'm sure that the average person would not understand, but it's definitely opened the window for a bunch of different styles, which can make each face-off guy unique, and you can be successful at the highest level with all of them. In terms of what my favorite part of facing off is, I like that it's a game within the game. You know, it's a lot of it is just on your, it's in your own hands. But at the same time, that's probably the worst part about facing off is it's very black and white. For a position that's not very black and white, there's a lot of intricacies that go into winning and losing faceoffs. The way it's statted is obviously a little funky. But it's also just unique to have so much control over one aspect of the game. You know, it's up to you and just you. And, you know, adjusting your wings to your strengths or your weaknesses to open up certain lanes or, you know, put them in a good position to pick up a loose ground ball. You know, you're kind of a coach on the field in a sense. And the coaches do a good job of allowing us to have the freedom to adjust our wings and, you know, set up plays on our own. And they give us a lot of freedom, which is really cool. I mean, they do that on all sides of the ball, but particularly in the face-off area, you know, it's very individual. And then we have to rely on each other, which is cool. You know, just three of us, you know, we kind of run the unit. Obviously with the supervision of Coach Madelon, we always get approval before we go do anything. We never go rogue, but it's also just tough where it's black and white. You know, if you're having a tough day, that stat's on the scoreboard, everyone can see it. You know, if you're sub 50%, everyone knows it's easy to point fingers right at that stat and be like, well, he didn't have a good day, despite if, you know, you had a few cause turnovers or the wings, you know, had a few cause turnovers, whether you were winning all the clamps and then you just weren't getting the bounces going your way. It's very black and white, which can be a blessing and a curse.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. It's the same with goalies. You can just look at saves from the goalies and, you know, a goalie can have a really good day and have a bad save percentage depending on the shots that they're seeing, or they can have, you know, they can contribute not much to a game, but have a great save percentage because the defense just completely locked up the other team and all they saw were small shots. Faceoffs are a little bit different, but you mentioned how faceoffs are statted, and there's so many faceoffs where the guy who wins the clamp doesn't get credit for the faceoff win because either the wings didn't pick up the ground ball or they had it briefly and it got it taken away. So yes, it is a very difficult thing to stat faceoffs. What's the toughest part? I mean, it's gotta be so physically grinding. And just to follow up on that, you know, what was it like to have COVID and then to come out of COVID and have to go take 29 faceoffs against Maryland? You know, the number one team in the country. It was, you know, I was actually impressed with how you did it. I mean, you were basically just, you know, the other two guys were out. If you weren't cleared, it would have been, you know, who in the world has ever taken a face-off before, raise your hand. So I was kind of impressed with the idea that you stepped in and did that.
Yeah. The toughest part of facing off, you know, it takes a really physical toll on your body. Just with having four guys sprint in at you, a lot of guys like targeting the face-off guy, you know, you get doubled a lot. You're getting whacked really hard. People are trying to drop a shoulder into you really often. You're kind of put in these scrum situations, which are just, you know, arguably some of the more physical aspects of lacrosse. So, you know, taking a lot of face-offs in a game and then also taking a lot of face-offs over a season, it takes a really big toll on your body. And then from the COVID standpoint, I mean, it was an experience to say the least. You know, the first half, I felt fine. Second half was when I kind of started to feel the COVID a little bit.
Running two guys at you.
Yeah, they were running two guys at me. They knew I was the only guy. They figured that out when we do our, before every game, they bring the face-off guys up to discuss the rules. I remember I went up and Coach Tillman was up there with him. And I remember him looking around and like leaning into his assistant coach being like, they only have one guy. And at that point I was like, okay, this is going to be they know that they're just going to try to run me. So they tried to play hangman with me. They kept me on the field as long as possible, had me running around, making tough substitutions. But yeah, it was just, you know, taking 30 faceoffs in a game alone is a lot, and it gets pretty exhausting. But you know, the second half was where I really started to you know, I was just having trouble steadying my breath a little bit, but you know, I was happy to just have the opportunity to put on the jersey and be out there with the team. You know, it's an honor anytime you get to have that. And knowing that my opportunities are so finite being a senior, I would do it again and
right. Like what you did helped keep that game as close as it was. And you've seen what Maryland has done to a lot of other teams. So, you know, that game was 15-10, largely because, you know, you were able to get out there and take faceoffs. You know, NCAA tournament, at most four more games for you, graduations in 2 weeks, less than 2 weeks now. What's next for you?
You know, I'm going to put my feet up right after lacrosse is over, hopefully with a ring to celebrate, take a month and a half off. And then I recently accepted a job, for a private equity firm in Boston that I'm really excited about. And just looking forward to, you know, kind of start a new chapter in my life and start my career. And, you know, it's going to be weird not having lacrosse or, you know, my grueling 2 hour summer workouts anymore, but, you know, it's also exciting at the same time to, you know, just kind of have a new chapter that is, you know, ahead of me that I can learn so much from and kind of start, you know, real life in a sense, you know, my professional career.
Well, Jack, thank you for taking the time to be with us. You know, Coach Madelon, before you came on, said Jack's going to be great, and he was right. You were exceptional here. So really appreciate your taking some time, and good luck on Saturday.
Thank you, Mr. Price. It's a pleasure to talk, as always.
For Princeton head coach Matt Madelon and for senior faceoff man Jack Henry Varr, I'm Jerry Price. You've been listening to the Princeton Laxcast. A reminder that it is Princeton-Boston University at noon on Saturday. That is on Sherrod Field in the opening round of the NCAA tournament. The women are also home this weekend. The first rounds on Friday will be Syracuse Fairfield at 4, Princeton UMass at 7. Those winners will play Sunday at noon on Sherrod Field. So huge weekend of lacrosse coming up. We will be back next week to talk to Coach Madelon again to see how this week went and hopefully look ahead to what is going on beyond that. But no matter what happens, we'll be back to talk to Coach Madelon. Jack, thank you for being with us. And thank you again for everybody who is listening and for your continued support of Princeton men's lacrosse.